Genius, Mickey.
Land supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by myself along with Peter Phillips. I'm the executive producer, Mickey Huff, of this program, also the host. Our co-host is Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest, our senior producer. Our associate producer is Dennis Murphy. Thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We lost a number of musical legends. We lost Andre Harrell, who was an architect for hip-hop and the, you know, hip-hop soul that they like to dub, that was prominent in the 1990s. We also lost Little Richard, who Questlove from the Roots said, don't call him a pioneer, don't call him an architect, call him the king, the blueprint of rock and roll. And then, of course, we lost Betty Wright. And Betty Wright is a well-known, influential, transformative singer. We know her for her records like The Cleanup Woman, but she's much deeper than that. Joining us on the phone line to talk to us about their legacies, or at least the legacies of Little Richard and Betty Wright, is our own Ricky Vincent, who does the history of funk. So, Ricky, man, how you doing, man? We've been losing a lot of people this year in the middle of the pandemic. Seems like every week somebody legendary has been going out.
It keeps coming, and, you know, I'm tired of turning my show into the obituary of funk, and not just the history of funk, but, you know, it's also an opportunity for us to kind of take another look at the legacies that all of our current music is built upon. And for some reason, we don't tell these stories enough. And we have a few outlets, you know about, you know, shows like Unsung, and, you know about some of the specials and tributes that people put together. But, you know, this, especially this black music, it's a form of knowledge of self. It's a form of history that connects us to something ancient, really, and current at the same time. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a tough spring, and, you know, that means we have to go down deep into the work of Bill Withers. That means we have to recognize Prince yet again, because we lost him and we're still in shock from how much talent and vision, you know, left us at such a difficult time. So, and then here we are again, with, like you said, Andre Harrell, with Little Richard, with Betty Wright. You know, you're just kind of getting knocked around like a pinball, and trying to sort of get centered. But one thing you can do, and we have, this is the one opportunity that we have with all the technology, is you can do an exploration of these people, look into their works, look into the groups and the chats and the links that people post about some of these people's, you know, incredible moments that you know, that are available, that can be found if you look. And so if you know what you're looking for, you can find an incredible legacy of music.
Yeah, I think you're right that there's something that resonates when you said this is the music that these folks put out really go back to the ancestors or ancient times. And maybe you can dig into that deeper. I don't want that remark to just kind of fly over people's heads, but music is more than just a consumption-oriented type of activity. Music, especially when it comes out of black folks, really means something. So can you maybe give that aspect to it as to why it's important, and why when we listen to Betty Wright, you know, a certain type of emotion emerges, or Little Richard, you know, even if you say you don't like rock and roll, you still got to engage him because it's something, you know, that touches your soul, literally, when you hear him do his thing.
Well, see, the thing is, in the realm of music, that's one of the few spaces at this, you know, minority group, the African descent population in the United States, is one of the few places where they can exist in certain contexts and present themselves as unapologetically black. And the audience, various contexts, will accept that, will take that, and they can do their thing. And it was very tricky for Little Richard because, you know, rock and roll was, you know, this whole post-war entertainment experience was putting black entertainers right in the face of white teenagers who were getting thrilled and excited by this stuff. And so Little Richard was not only the originator of a sound, he was the originator of a formula for navigating, you know, race and identity and sexuality and passion and all kinds of intense, you know, emotions and forms and ideas, right in the middle of America forming itself as a modern nation. So he was way ahead of the game. But what he tapped into, and all these greats tap into, this lineage of expression, lineage of telling something true about yourself, your community, your people, telling a natural truth, okay? And
right.
That's what we said back in the day. That's a natural fact, right? And so these artists bring us back to the, you know, the true nature of things and the true nature of who we are, what our aspirations are. And yeah, everybody likes to party and get down and you know, flirt, have these little things go on, but we're also speaking to our present and our past, as well as our future. But when they tap into the blues, when they tap into the soul, when they get that groove, when they get that rhythm, that's tying into something else. And that's the unapologetically black aspect of black popular music, of American popular music.
Let's look at a Little Richard. We're talking with Ricky Vincent from The History of Funk, the author of a couple of books. And when it comes to music, this gentleman has been featured in over 20 documentaries from all around the world, speaking on funk and soul. Little Richard, as you describe, is coming up in the segregated South, where people are still being lynched and hunted down. He's living at a time when your sexuality better be very, very clear. Like, we're not playing if you are not heterosexual, so to speak. He's coming up at a time when the church is playing a key role, and it's one of the few outlets that people can do their thing. And yet he's breaking all these barriers that you described, which I don't know if people have a full appreciation, because many people were killed when they tried to cross those barriers. But a thing that really stands out for me above and beyond is that in spite of all that pressure, he was a damn good musician, a damn good performer, a damn good singer. Can we talk about the skill set that he brings to the table? Because I don't even think there's a lot of people that match that to this day.
Well, you got that right, Dave. And he was able to arrange and write and conceive of records and bring them to completion. And he had to be held back in terms of some of the things he was saying. Some of those wop, baba, loobop, some of those sounds were actually lyrics that he was told you can't say those kind of lyrics. So he had to work within that system. Yeah. And I think Tutti Frutti, there was a little more to what Tutti Frutti was about, but old Rudy, I think there was, it rhymes with booty, but I don't think that became the lyric in the song.
Right.
I'll just leave it at that. So he was working on that, and what's interesting is historians know that, you know, sort of the risque, off-color entertainment has always been a part of black popular music. It goes to Bessie Smith. You can go way, way back to some of the early recorded blues and realize, you know, grown folks have had their forms of entertainment, but there was always a way to navigate it, to manage it. And in a sense, you can sort of contain it in a way and in a place so that it doesn't get out, doesn't get overexposed. So folks understood Little Richard was coming from that wild man source, from the intellectuals would talk about the trickster, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who is saying something and you think he's saying something crazy, but there's something serious underneath it. And so Little Richard was well aware of that, and that helped him be a moving target. So he could put out this music to get you fired up, get you hot and bothered, and you know, he really has a, you know, kind of an agenda there.
Little Richard and Mom, Tall Sally.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. He came, he had the misery, but he had a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Oh, baby. They had at least some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, long Tall Sally, she's Bill's piece of guy.
one another, you get it. And you're going to meet the winners of the Harvest Moon Contest, Jimmy and Jovita dancing to Little Richard and Tutti Frutti.
She rock to the west, but she's the gal that I love best. What you do to me, do the food?
What do you think his agenda was?
His agenda was to get under people's skin, number one. And part of that gets you a hit, right? James Brown was a diligent follower of that. You know, let's get, you know, if you scream, you get that pass, you touch that button, and that ecstasy button, and, you know, the reaction that you'll get, and people will be addicted to you like a drug. So that was part of it. But he was also kind of creating open space where if you are, you know, if you're in this emotionally charged space, everything I do will be accepted by certain parts of you, a certain level of you, and you'll be able to take me in. There's a song way back to Why Not Take All of Me. Bootsy says that on one of his records. Why not take all of me? And so there, it was a way of saying, you know, you have to accept me this way. And in a sense, he was ahead of the Civil Rights Act and all the civil rights music, saying, you know, essentially, accept me as I am, me respect, say it loud. Blah, blah, blah. He was pushing that agenda in a subtle way. That's how you had to do it back then. So he was changing the game everywhere he went, every way, you know, he was doing it. And you can't pin him down. You can't say, well, is that serious? I guess not. But wait a minute, I'm a changed person now after experiencing you.
So the word they used to use for black music was subversive. And from the days of slave masters listening to black people play drums and realizing, like, they're communicating, to the FBI studying and keeping in immense amounts of files bigger than the Schomburg Museum on black culture, but black music in general, to the CIA and others that were keeping tabs on everybody from Bob Marley on down, there's always been a fear. Is the fear that Little Richard was putting a message in the music, or was the fear that white people were actually abandoning their favorite artists and coming over to what Little Richard was doing? And as they would say, once upon a time, he was niggerizing or helping niggerize the country.
All of the above. And that's where you talk about folks that are masters. They're masters of multiple crafts and navigating, you know, the racial elements of the industry, the racial elements of entertainment, and controlling the narrative, or at least stirring the pot of that narrative so people couldn't, contain it and put it in a box. And that is what is always difficult for African American artist, because you get established doing one thing, and that's all people know what to say about you. That's all they know of you. And so you have to kind of keep coming at people in a crazy way. That's, I mean, it's like Flavor Flav in Public Enemy. If he wasn't there, it would just be another hard rapper talking about things, and you would kind of be able to anticipate the next verse or whatever. Flavor Flav comes in and throws everything sideways, and you're busy trying to catch up to where he was and what he did, and then boom, the hard rhymer Chuck comes back in and hits you. And so that's how Little Richard was operating. You think he's about to say something that's a relationship, but then it's sense but nonsense. And but there's an excitement there that you can't contain or control. And you know, he knew what he had, and he knew how to manipulate people, but you have to be careful back. He had to be careful back then.
Right.
And so he basically, you know, set in motion something that everybody else picked up on. And if you think about it, other rock and rollers, it was the black rock and rollers that followed suit. It was Jimi Hendrix. It was Prince, right? It was James Brown. You know, it was all the P-Funk characters and Out to Lunch folks that, you know, were celebrating being psychedelic versions of themselves and all of this stuff. He opened the door for all of that stuff.
Right.
And but it was, you had to be a little bit more, you had to be careful. You couldn't say in 1958, I'm black and I'm proud, right? But you could, you know, create an exaggerated theatrical rendering of yourself to say I'm larger than life, that type of thing.
Now, black, you know, white folks who were in power understood that Richard was to be feared, and they tried to stop him. Can you talk about some of the ways in which they tried to dilute him? I mean, we heard the stories of folks redoing his records, even putting the name rock and roll in front of his music. Because I don't know, did he call his music rock and roll? It seemed like he didn't come out the box saying that. So let's talk about, no, you know, the ways in which they tried to dilute his potent energy.
Well, that was exactly the plan, that you were going to have to try to contain and control this thing. Otherwise, not only would he have, you know, break boundaries, there would be, in the wake of Little Richard, all these black entertainers saying and doing things that can't be controlled or contained. And so what he did, so people, yeah, immediately, you know, when Elvis shows up, they call him the king, which somehow moves out of the center. They had to take Little Richard, to another extent Chuck Berry, out of the center of this idea of what is rock and roll. But what is rock and roll? I mean, yes, it's these four bar, you know, verses and choruses and you know, and these stomping dance songs, but no, it's excitement. It's taking the electronics, the new technology, the electric guitars and the amplification, and getting you excited. It was rebel music. It was music to, you know, express your youthful energy by. And that in itself was dangerous to the establishment, because, you know, they were busy trying to produce you know, young patriots for the war effort, for labor and things like that. They didn't want these people finding themselves, let alone finding themselves around a bunch of Negroes and,
right, right,
and realizing that there's something else to life beyond conformity and patriotism and things like that. So, well, like I'm saying, he sparked a whole new way of looking at oneself, which is really what rock and roll is about at its core.
Hey, yo! got my paw myself. Good golly, Miss Molly. Ricky Vincent, who gives birth to Little Richard, and who does Little Richard give birth to, musically speaking? Who's his influence? Does he come out of a cannon, or is he just a unique entity that changes the game?
Well, I think the extravagant, theatrical character has been around for a very long time. And I think you can find that if you, you can find some anthropologists that, look at the some of the masks and dance clothing in West Africa, you can find a lot of evidence that this was something that was considered a divine aspect of us connecting with who we are, who we were, and things of that nature. So the theatrical character was always a part of Black tradition, and for him, for Little Richard, and he, by doing so, he can, like I said, loosen people's idea of what a standard is, what maleness is, and things like that. You can toy with it, you can play with it, and while you're playing with it, you're getting people a little bit out of those boxes. But I go back to one of the first recording blues artists, and that's Robert Johnson. He did the song Me and the Devil. Me and the Devil, walking side by side, that's like 1930s. And then Robert Johnson does a wail, Me and the Devil, whoo, that is, if you draw a line, you can draw that Little Richard wail to some of that Robert Johnson wail. And there's something about that, whatever, ecstatic moment in that music that caught fire, caught hell, if you will, the troubled path that Robert Johnson had, but blues artists in general were framed as decadent, as the playing the devil's music and things like that. And so folks made that decision to do that. They were going to pay that price. And Little Richard comes along and says, "Well, I'm going to build on that, and I want to create sort of a character of myself, and or just market myself as this character, because I don't know if I've ever heard of Little Richard in downtime where he's not hooting and hollering and saying that stuff. And some people are always that colorful, right. And so I have a feeling that he's that way, and he said, "Well, I'm going to market this because I'm a moving target when I do that."
You talked about the yelling, and I remember when you were doing one of your History of Funk shows, you talked about all the great singers had a special moan and yell that they did. You're right? I mean, from Prince on down to the Cameo. So that really traces itself back above and beyond, I would imagine, that yell that, you can call it primal or whatever.
Yeah, well, that meant if you're the next soul artist, the next artist in that region, how are you going to distinguish yourself? You can't just pretend that you how are you going to do it without having some sort of level of that passion, especially in the southern music. When you get to the northern thing, there's an air of sophistication around Motown and the 60s and the smooth soul crooners, but all of the smooth soul crooners will always hit that note. Mm-hmm. You listen to Russell Tompkins or the Stylistics, you listen to the OJs, they'll get to that note. Sometimes they'll take their time taking you there. And James Brown would scream, you know, at beginning, middle, and end, please, please, please. He's screaming throughout the whole thing. Other people are subtle. Prince kind of brought that back to the forefront and got people to not just follow him doing these chants as part of an act, but he was really part of a lineage, if you will. And so it's easiest to spot Little Richard because of the recordings, because of rock and roll, the whole rock and roll industry. He transformed the rock and roll industry because he put a next level of passion into the rock and roll industry. And that's why you see people like Paul McCartney and these other superstars just bowing down to him, saying, right, you know, I didn't know what that was.
Did was he influenced by Cab Calloway and what's the guy who did Cardonia? I'm forgetting his name. You know I'm talking about.
Louis Jordan?
Louis Jordan, or were they influenced by him? And did Little Richard have rivals? Because, you know, for some reason, and you would know better, I always wondered, did Little Richard do a song with Chuck Berry? Did they get down with Fats Domino? Did they ever come together and say, let's posse up? Or were they just kind of like, nah, I'm Little Richard, that's Chuck Berry. We two different entities.
It's hard to frame it in terms of, you know, the beef that rappers have in current times and things like that. Because folks were busy they had to kind of create an institution of their own. They had to, you know, we would call it a posse today, but that's just hangers on. But he would have an operation of people that could, you know, negotiate, that could navigate, you know, the club environment, navigate the business environment, navigate the recording environment. In some cases, James Brown wound up doing all of that himself. Little Richard and others, they had a crew, and that in itself was kind of job one. And to some extent, they would overlap, but it was, you know, the thing was, let me get established, and then, you know, let me get this kind of road show going where I can go to these spots and have a regular thing. And then, you know, how do we get to the big venue? How do I get the white man to hire me? That kind of stuff. And it wasn't necessarily, I'm going to beat so-and-so. Now, on stage, yes. If they're doing something, if they're both billed together, one's going to try to smoke the other one. But for the most part, it was, you know, hey, you've got some too. You know, good luck. We're both up here fighting Jim Crow while we're trying to entertain.
morning, Lucille was not in sight. I asked my friends about her, but all they did was tight. Lucille, please come by with your love. I'm bigger to you, baby. Please don't leave me alone. Lucille, baby, satisfy my heart. Lucille, baby, satisfy my heart.
You know, if you had to pick two or three things that you want listeners to really explore or know about Little Richard, what would that be? Either something about his life or a particular song or album that he did, you know, what would be those three things that you would say, this is Little Richard and this is what you got to explore about him?
The two things that always kind of jump out, and he wanted to make that jump out, is his combination of sense and nonsense. So think about what he does when he makes a song about somebody, and then he makes these noises, and you're like, well, is that nonsense, or is that related to who's, what is he, you know, like I said, that's, yeah, boy, you know, what he's connecting, the all these things. And the other is, like you mentioned, his musicality, but you have to kind of carefully listen to his piano playing and how that goes all the way back to ragtime and all the rhythms that he's throwing in between everything else he's doing, because there's a front layer of, you know, just the rhythm, wop, bop, 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 bang, boom, doo, 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 and you're on the top of that rhythm, but he's underneath it on the piano doing other things to make it bounce, to make it syncopated, to make it something where you and I know that there are ways you can listen to a certain style of black music all night long.
Right.
And to an outsider, it sounds like the same, but somebody's scratching in the mix, guitar players playing in the mix, you know, different things are going to keep it going and keep it alive. And those two things, again, they help Little Richard get you, and yet be a moving target, because you can't get to the bottom. It's hard to transcribe one of those songs because there's actually a lot going on. And
right.
The great ones do that. The great ones make a real complicated, a real involved work very accessible. It's really easy to get.
What about his sexuality, Ricky Vincent? Does he get props for maybe opening the doors and maybe getting people to maybe, and I think you even mentioned, to look a little bit beyond the confines of gender? And I'm asking this knowing that when people were calling Elvis Presley the king, Little Richard is, you know, is attributed to saying, well, if he's the king, I'm the queen. And so there's a little bit of that trickster in him. And then at the same time, he'll turn around and be like, I'm very religious and I'm with God and I don't do all that. So what was that about?
Yeah, where did that come from?
Yeah, what was his whole... The dance he was doing with sexuality, and long before Prince, ambiguity, androgynous is what I'm looking for.
Right. That's what, and androgyny, he was, he knew, and others in similar spaces knew that you couldn't just play this, for lack of a better term, you couldn't play it straight. You couldn't play it by the book. He knew he had a lifestyle, he had, you know, passions that kind of weren't in the norm of conformity at that time. But he also knew that was part of what made him go. That's part of what made him, gave him the, you know, the spark to become the icon that he was. That's part. And if you listen to his, almost everything he says, there's a joke in it. He's using humor to dislodge people, to throw them a little bit off. He's using a lot of slang and mother wit. He's using, you know, sort of cultural references and things to get you to, you know, kind of try to figure him out. But also, he places, you know, I remember he talked about Jimi Hendrix, and he said he made my big toe stand up in my boot. I don't know, wait a minute, what is he talking about? But
That's what he said.
Yeah, that's what he said. You know, he had a thing for Jimmy. A lot of people did.
Yeah.
But he used it in a way that was so sideways. You're like, what the heck is he talking about? His shoes don't fit. Wait a minute. What is he talking about? And so you can't. He's not going to stay there for you. You might recognize something, but then he's on to something else, and he's keeping you guessing. And in rock and roll at that time, and he made it okay. Some people might have said, well, rock and roll is this sort of conformity of alpha male aggression, Elvis Presley and these other folks kind of going by the book. But Little Richard said, no, rock and roll is any way you want to do it to get you excited, to get you going.
Right.
And that, and you know, others like Ray Charles were doing that too. But by getting people loose, that way you can have a moving target, and I just got entertained. Not, oh, that man has, I'm questioning his heterosexuality. I mean, you're not there because you're busy, you know, getting razzled and dazzled. And the great ones keep you so thrilled, you're not busy analyzing all of that. Sly and the Family Stone did that with race. People, you know, have to step back and say, well, as a matter of fact, it was a multiracial band. I didn't even notice. I was hooting and hollering so much.
Right.
That kind of thing. So, and that, you know, that's a level of the tradition that is not very often touched on by others. And that is something that black folks take pride in, even if they don't know what to make of Little Richard's sexuality and lifestyle. But they can take pride in what he was and who he was and how he could get people to this sort of next level of being in the moment.
Real talk, Ricky Vincent. We appreciate you taking time out. Of course, Ricky Vincent, the author of the book, History of Funk on the One.
Funk, the music, the people, and the rhythm of the one.
Thank you. Because, you know, I just know you always have the history of funk. You know, and even though we have
that's
the book.
We do.
And then, of course, Party Music, which was, you know, landmark book, looking at the funk band that the Black Panthers had, but it's so much more that you went into, and really giving us deeper political context to really understanding black music. So Ricky, we appreciate you taking time out. We will check you out on Friday night doing your thing, and thank you for sharing with us and dropping this knowledge.
Okay, David D, thanks for doing what you have been doing, man. We need you so bad.
Well, we're all in it together. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Well, all right, everybody. Yeah. I just got back from my tour in England. Yeah. Everybody's talking about the rock and quavo in England. Yeah. Come on over, baby. Hold on, while the shake is going on. Shake, baby, shake.
graduate dress on, on that walk out in his red and blue jeans. Shaking that. All I got little blue eyed girls shaking.
Hard knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else is just imitation. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard knock. Radio. Let's go. Big shout out to Davey D. Yeah. On it down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though.
Yeah.
Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Now Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Help you. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat to the belly from the steel gray beef. Say please, maybe it'll save you a seat at the table with a great red making. Second piece to the lovers I laid with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. You go, hey, it ain't David D.
Real Talk Radio. You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
The crisis created by the coronavirus has revealed with amazing speed how vulnerable the United States and indeed nations around the world is to something that the human eye cannot see. In a matter of days, the world's most aggressive economy crumbled like crackers, and within weeks, a few dozen coronavirus cases exploded to well over a million, while in 2 months, over 87,000 people lost their lives, from infants to the elderly. To say that the U.S. was ill-equipped to handle this virus is understatement. The medical system was overwhelmed. The political system was outmatched. And most other systems simply shut their doors, went home, and battened down the hatches as if waiting for a great storm. But what kind of storm is silent and unseen? Apparently, a viral one. Are vaccines the solution? Apparently not. For the best vaccine, claim about 40% efficacy, which means, of course, that 60% of the vaccinated population find that it isn't effective. And who really believes that the government can or will vaccinate over 300 million people? The government that can't find the people it promised to give money to will vaccinate over 300 million people? I mean, who believes that? If this were, as claimed, an America First government, what would an American Last government look like? And how can there be an America First policy when Americans come in dead last? In a few days, 100,000 Americans, men, women, and children, will be dead, with a level of sheer incompetence that is frankly stunning. The nation is marching headlong into the abyss. From imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
My brother. father hit me in the morning, sounding like he was mourning, barely dawning. His voice already had the weight of the world all on it. The worry and stress, not just bills and the rent, but the global unrest when we never know what's coming next. I wrote these 16s under quarantine from a pandemic, and the whole planet's panicking, imagining where we headed. Like tomorrow, something dreaded to just expect the unexpected. Fear of the future diluting our faith, but wait, we can't let it. Cause we fathers now, it falls on our shoulders to mold our children with hope and show them the beauty all around. We'll walk to the park and just stare at the stars and wonder, or run through the mud and the rain and then hide from the thunder. Build castles in the sand, just let them laugh and play, and tuck them in and tell them stories that'll never wash away. And Bobby, keep a smile, but when it's time to cry, let them fall with pride. That's the love you feel for that little guy, gives them wings to fly. Above all the obstacles, full of love, they unstoppable, off to accomplish the impossible, let's watch them fly. Above all the worldly madness, it's hard to imagine something as simple as laughter will give them wings to fly. Above all the worry and stress that's bubbling in your chest, just keep doing your best, brother, and stay fly. The days are long, the years come by surprise. Deep breaths through it all, cause time loves to just fly by. Don't waste a second of it. I know it's heavy in the moment, but we'll rise above it. Turn off the news and social media, just unplug it. Cause all it's gonna do is make you wanna say it. But focus where the love is. Don't waste a second of it. I know it's heavy in the moment, but we'll rise above it. Turn off the news and social media, just unplug it. Cause what we need to do is simply focus where the love is. The love is. The love is in the eyes of your child, the way they shine like only freedom does when they're young and running wild. The love is in the sound that they laugh, the sun like the song from the heavens. You gonna wish you could remember every second. The love, you find it in the person who you blessed to be with, the one you share your life with and all of your secrets. The love is in your family, both blood and chosen. Relationships over distances with bonds unbroken. Just focus on the beauty in life, though it's interwoven with strife. And every day feels like a roll of the dice, with leeches bleeding the planet like they not knowing the price. But everything can change for the better when the moment's precise. So hold tight, remember life rotates in phases, and sometimes we find God in some of the least expected places. And it's darkest before sun up, go on and pick your son up, tell him you love him and why you're teaching him how to fly. Above all the obstacles, full of love, they unstoppable, off to accomplish the impossible, let's watch him fly. Above all the worldly madness, it's hard to imagine something as simple as laughter will give him wings to fly. Above all the worry and stress that's bubbling in your chest, just keep doing your best, brother, and stay fly. The days are long, the years come by surprise. Deep breaths through it all, cause time loves to just fly by. Don't waste a second of it. I know it's heavy in the moment, but we'll rise above it. Turn off the news and social media, just unplug it. Cause all it's gonna do is make you wanna say it. But focus where the love is. Don't waste a second of it. I know it's heavy in the moment, but we'll rise above it. Turn off the news and social media, just unplug it. Cause what we need to do is simply focus where the love is. The love is.
Ha, hey, ha, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Cop, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio, Brown Buffalo. All up in your stereo. Yo, and to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks. Living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop. Listening to hard knocks, ripping to the poor style.
Somebody help me, set me free. I can't take this new reality. How much longer can it be? Where's the humanity? I look around and all I see, masked faces staring at me. Keep your distance, don't touch me. Get your hands off my TP. Thank you. Somebody save my sanity. The COVID killer's coming after me. How much longer will it be? Where's the humanity? I'm sick and tired of staying at home. Even worse, I live alone. Gotta get out, I need to roam. You can't shake hands on the phone. I need to touch, I need to feel, I need to hug a friend for real. I'm not down for this new deal. I'm not down for this new deal. The COVID killer keeps piling it on. Counting the dead goes on and on. We gotta stay safe, gotta be strong. Ride this out no matter how long. There's no borders, there's no walls. Alone together, we stand, we fall. Around the world, hear the call. Alone together, we stand, we fall. Somebody help me, set me free. I can't take this new reality. How much longer can it be? Where's the humanity? Somebody save my sanity. The COVID killer's coming after me. How much longer will it be? Where's the humanity?
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against. Yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, glory. Oh,
glory, glory.
Now the war is not over. Victory isn't won. But we'll fight on to the finish. And then when it's all done, we'll cry glory. Oh, glory. Oh,
Selma is now. For every man, woman, and child.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is in the last week of our spring fundraiser. Donate today at kboo.fm to give a one-time gift or sign up to become a monthly sustaining member. Show your support for programming that informs, challenges the mainstream, and lifts voices from